We're at a conference. You went to the conference for a reason. Networking, learning, education, to get out of the house for 5 days, whatever. There's a reason, right? We're always driven by incentives. And the more that the employer can recognize that and provide the right incentives and rewards, the better and healthier the exchange ends up being.
Run toward the unknown when you're riding the big wheel. You're not alone.
In this episode, we're talking with Scott Kaywood, CEO of World at Work, the global leader in total rewards education and research, and author of The New Work Exchange, Embracing the Future and Putting Employees First. In this insightful conversation, Scott and I talk about the evolution of the relationship between the employee and employer, and what is it that leaders need to think about and consider as they seek to attract and retain top talent. We also get into the personal side of work and getting beyond leading workers and transitioning to leading people. And Scott will define for us what the new work exchange is and how we can understand what is it that employees, which are really people, really want and what the employer, the company, expect and need. It's an exchange and something that both parties should benefit from that's far more thoughtful and less transactional than a paycheck alone. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I do, and as always, may it inspire you in your personal and professional journey of life. So today with me, I have Scott Kaywood. Scott, thank you so much for agreeing to be on Riding the Big Wheel today. Scott, you are the CEO of World at Work, which is the largest research and education total rewards organization globally. You're also author of a book, The New Work Exchange, which we're going to be talking about today. But can you first talk to us just a little bit about the work that you do, a little about World at Work, and your mission and vision as an organization?
Absolutely. And I'm really happy to be here. And thank you for spending some time with me. World at Work was founded in 1955, really out of a need to understand pay and benefits and what's a good incentive, what's a good fair market pay. We do a lot of work in pay equity. We have certifications in 190 countries. We operate on and off between 150, 160 countries, just trying to set standards for what work and therefore compensation, benefits, and total rewards, what is it putting together, how do you optimize that and hopefully give somebody a great place to work and give the business great outcomes. And that's really the business that we're in.
That's really interesting for me. So the book talks about embracing the future by putting employees first. Now, when we think about what World at Work does and we think about the transition of how work has evolved and the relationship between employer and employees, that was the first thing that really caught my attention about what you were talking about. As you looked at history and the evolution of the relationship between employer and employee, and pay, can you talk to us, and how that's changed over time, can you talk to us a little bit about the evolution and some of the reasons behind that?
Sure. When you break it down, you know, work is a small word. It's four letters. But wow, does it have a big impact on every aspect of our life, our social being, our financial well-being, our emotional well-being. There's really nothing like it that has the impact on the human experience like work. And over history, it's kind of had a scandalous, you know, background. I mean, work has had moments over time that were great and some moments that we look back on and just wish it had never happened. But it's all shaped today how we think about work and how we work and why we work. I think COVID's a good example of maybe having us rethink this thing called work and what we're willing to put up with and not put up with to truly engage. So for me, I wrote the book because work is really always a fundamental exchange. I'm going to do something for you, and you're going to do something for me. And it's in that exchange, it's that reciprocity of work that the magic happens. And so if the exchange is off, either I'm giving too much or I'm giving too little, or you're giving too much or you're giving too little, that employer-employee relationship there in that exchange constantly has to be nurtured and managed. And over time, I think we've learned some things about how that exchange needs to be in order to make it more healthy. And that's kind of why I wrote the book, I think, in general.
So I learned some things. And let's just start talking about how people's needs have changed over time. I think that when I think about the history of work, and well, I even think about myself, when I graduated from college, I got a job because I needed a job to pay the bills. I thought about what my skill sets were, what I had studied, but I didn't really think about, Scott, and I think this is refreshing that today you can, but I didn't really think about what's the type of work environment that I want to be in and how will I enjoy interacting with my colleagues if that's something that that I want to do. How do I think about my career? I was really thinking about how do I get a job that I know I have the skills for that and I can apply effectively, but those other things I hadn't really thought through. I don't know how that was for when you were looking at a job, but it seems that that has changed now, what people are looking for when they engage and are looking for a new work opportunity.
Yeah. And so I think you've raised a really important part about work. It's the incentives behind it. Right? Why would you want to participate in this particular exchange?
Yeah.
And what are you looking to get out of it? Because when those are a match, we know great things happen. And oftentimes, though, they're not a match because either maybe you went to work for making a lot of money, but you're not paid very well, right? So the exchange isn't quite as robust. There's all sorts of ways to look at incentives. And you know, one of the pieces I hope that come across in the book is that every human being on the planet, I got two fundamental beliefs that guide some of this. The first one is nobody on the planet wants to be mediocre. Okay, we don't show up to work, say, hey, I'm going to be mediocre. It's my first day. I'm going to be mediocre. Nobody on the planet does that. So when someone does become mediocre, I always look for the exchange. Why did they join? What were they looking for? Are they getting that experience out of it? And vice versa. What are we giving? What are we offering? Because it's somewhere in that mediocrity, the organization probably has let something slide on that exchange that could have been maybe more tailored or better for that individual. So the first one really is just mediocrity piece. I don't buy it. I think if we have mediocre employees, we own a big part of that as an employer. And I think the second big aha that I wanted to write about in the book is every human being is consciously and subconsciously driven by incentives. Right? We show up to places for something. We're at a conference. You went to the conference for a reason. Networking, learning, education, to get out of the house for 5 days, whatever. There's a reason, right? We're always driven by incentives. And the more that the employer can recognize that and provide the right incentives and rewards, the better and healthier the exchange ends up being. But let's face it, nobody wants to work for a jerk. It's hard to work for a bad boss. And I think people's tolerance for that threshold has gone down quite a bit. People aren't as willing to put up with things because they know there may be other options, right? There may be even including not working there anymore. Right? So I think you're seeing a threshold of BS kind of tolerance getting lower in today's market. And we'll see how this plays out, as the market maybe shrinks a bit and jobs become less fruitful. But in general, I just continue to find people's tolerance for things like bad bosses and really structured work and control and command less and less optimal.
So let's talk about when I think about a lot of the people that are listening to this podcast, people in leadership and employees as well. Let's talk about how, first, as a leader, what are the things that I need to be thinking about in the new work exchange? I believe that through the pandemic, here's a lot of things that I hear, right? People aren't working as hard. I hear that. I hear we really want them in the office, but then to what end? I mean, I am very clear on what end when I do want people in there. And it full disclosure, we're not full-time in. I am hybrid in, and I'd like to have a conversation around that. But it's like I hear from leaders that, since the pandemic, in quotes, that people are just different and maybe not giving their all. And then I hear from the employee side, why is it that leaders aren't listening to me and what it is that's really important to me? And then I'll bring up a third point, which is probably like too much, but I've got so much on my mind to talk to you about today. But I talked to some younger people in my family, like my nieces, nephews, and my children, and I asked them, okay, you're entering the workforce now. You're in your young 20s. Maybe they've had a job for a couple of years, few years. What is it that you most value and want? And the real young, even the super smart, they're just not sure. Like something is going wrong. And so I guess I would first ask you from a leadership perspective, what should we be thinking about in this work exchange?
I think I would point us to having every leader on the planet take a moment and really understand his or her or their mental model as it relates to work. You know, for example, if you go back to the Industrial Revolutions, which had a massive impact on work, the first one, the second one, the third one, we're now on the fourth one. But the first three in particular took mass amounts of people off of farms, had to train them technically to come into a factory.
Yeah.
Then we took them from that factory to much more automation, right? So automized. And you see these big shifts in the workplace. But every large-scale change like that was based on the assumption that you had to be in a certain spot at a certain time doing a certain thing. Right? Even when you were on a farm, what dictated your schedule was the sun and the weather, not a boss. So when we moved into the factories, we got dictated by a shift. You work 9 to 5, you work 12 to 8, and you had to be at a certain spot because that's where the work was. And there's a lot of that mentality that still exists. I mean, I find that when I ask companies, do you really pay for productivity? Do you pay for performance? What they're really paying for is your time that your butt is in a seat somewhere. Right, we see it, and that mentality is pretty ingrained in a lot of leaders still today. Because for hundreds of years, we've had to be at a certain spot at a certain time doing a certain thing, and that was what productivity meant. This is forcing us to redefine productivity. And you know, if you listen to some of the, and I'm going to pick on banking for a moment. Some of my colleagues in the banking industry, the CEOs, kept saying we want people to work harder, and I've repeatedly heard it. And my question for them is going to be the same as I'll ask right now. Why harder? Why couldn't it be different? How about more unique? Why does harder? Because does it mean more? In a productivity mindset, yeah. If I work harder, maybe I can make 15 more pieces. But in today's work, productivity means something very different. And it doesn't have to be done in a certain time. We're not measuring your time, right? But the mentality is, if you're still stuck in that mentality, you have to be here at this time to do this type of work, then you're probably going to miss out on a lot of capabilities that are sitting right in front of you that you're not seeing because you're gluing them to a seat when they could do some creative work elsewhere, probably faster and maybe even cheaper in the long run.
So for me, that was one of the big aha moments in that book, because here's what you're saying. You're not saying, hey, leaders, you've got it all wrong. What you're saying is, hey, it's an evolution, and now it's time for us to change again. So what we, instead of just saying, don't do this, but do that, it's almost like you have given some pardon, because this is how we were raised and what we have believed. But it's time to change. And I think it's so interesting to look at it that way, because I also believe that it's not harder. I think about, what can I do to make the team more efficient, so that they can spend more time really thinking about solutions, because we solve problems for our clients. And I don't want them buried in spreadsheets I would love us to automate more workflows, and I want them really thinking and being creative. And it's not really that 9 to 5 anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's a big potential risk, as I see, as we make this, in your words, the evolution, which I think this is. It's whether or not we can quickly enough redefine productivity to truly include what productivity means in 2024 and 25 versus what it meant 100 years ago in one of the Industrial Revolutions. Because what it will force us to do is to be much more clear on what we need you, in this case Michelle, to do, the outcomes. Because I could easily say, make 75 parts in 75 minutes. That's the productivity goal. Mm-hmm. But what does that translate to in today's economy, where a lot of it is in our heads? It's the creative space, it's the speed with which you act. Those things are much more intangible sometimes. And so we can't apply all this tangible outcomes like a piece per minute rate, right, from the previous revolutions. We have to figure out a new way to think about productivity now, and how do we help people do their best work when we know that it's not as finite as a production mentality. We're no longer defined by, you know, production. We're really defined by consumers doing things at a very quick pace. We're all digesting information much more quickly. You know, for me, what's driving things right now at work is really this notion of absorbing content, right? We're just absorbing it at a speed we've never done before. And that's driving a lot of behaviors.
So what I really want to think about, or what I really want to know from you, because you are a very forward-thinking evangelist in this space, I believe, in shaping the future of work. But yet, Scott, what you're talking about is very tangible, and it is things. There's hope for leaders and hope for employees and the employer work exchange, I believe. I believe that since the pandemic, we have the best opportunity. It just accelerated things that were already coming to have a great working relationship between the employee and the employer. And I'm just thinking about how leaders can start to change their own mindset, but then tangibly start to take a step in understanding how they can operationalize the change.
I think maybe a couple steps, you know, and I always encourage anybody I talk to do a bit of an audit inside their organization, because there are some things that are a bit more costly now than even before COVID. And a good example is if there are inconsistent messages in your company. Let's say, for example, on the wall, you've got these amazing values, right? Integrity, teamwork, trust. And then we get in there and we realize, oh, there's something going on that sends a very different message. And my favorite example was I visited a company and I was standing, and I always arrive early. I'm a lurker by nature. I want to see the system before they know that I'm, you know, in the parking lot. I avoid trying to get arrested, of course, but I always like to see it, right? And I see everybody going into the facility and they're getting searched by security guards. And as everybody exited, the employees were all searched. Backpacks, purses, all opened, all looked through. Wow. But I get into the, I'm walking with the general manager and I'm walking down the hallway and lo and behold, there's these values on the wall. What would you guess was the number one value? Trust. So I had to say, hold on a minute. Can we just talk about this for a minute? Because, and I explained what just happened. I witnessed several people getting searched, but trust was the number one global value. I said, I can tell you right now, you don't really have trust as a value. I mean, it's on the wall. But let me give you something for free. Take a marker, scribble it out, and write what you really value, which is anti-theft. Right? That's what the real value was. They were trying to protect those manufacturing company. And those inconsistencies are really damaging to the work exchanges because you're in some ways you're saying trust and integrity and teamwork, and then you're destroying that by a simple act of searching me coming in and out. And that's one audit would be, let's figure out what the things on the wall say, what your employee experience proposition is, or whatever those things are, and make sure that it's truly being lived. And then the second big to do is to make sure that the ways in which you are thinking about productivity and success are still relevant. Mm. There's a really good chance that the ways in which you formulate what success looks like, what a great job looks like, is going to be very different. And if no one believes that that's an issue, have anybody who has a child and they're a teenager knowing, asking them what their, you know, what their life is like, what they like to do. They're going to be very, it's a very different experience now, right? As we, as our, you know, kids get, like, come, you know, they're 15, but they're acting like they're 30, right? There's just this notion of understanding and even our home lives that things are changing very quickly. So I would assess and try to figure out, do you really match what success? Because I would argue you're going to have a hard time convincing me that I have to sit in the same spot in the office, in the same seat for 40 hours a week to be successful and productive. I think there are more ways to define it. So do the work. See if you can define it differently and make the exchanges a lot better. You're going to get more work in the end out of everyone because they're going to want to be there and want to contribute. So if we can figure those things out, I mean, that's a big category, but even one or two of those success factors could be very impactful to the workforce.
So now let's talk about what employees are looking for. Now, what I love about World at Work is you talk about total rewards. And what I really love about what you bring to the party yourself is that, you know, it's all about pay with World at Work, but it's really not all about pay when we talk about total rewards. In fact, I've had a couple of nephews who are like, well, it's not really how much I make. You know, it's do I make enough to be able to get an apartment, have a car, you know, go camping, whatever it is that interests them. So I'd love to talk about how you see the from, and it varies. We talked about this by demographic as well, but how you see the what people are looking for and what the total rewards are evolving into. Can we talk a little bit about that?
You've raised a really, really important point. So I want to try to give this the justice that it needs.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll do that, Michelle, by asking a question. It's a bit rhetorical, but I think you'll understand where I'm going with it. It's if you say to me, Scott, design a total rewards experience that makes you the best employee, I would say, okay, I could do that. And then maybe the alternative is you say to me, you know, Scott, design an internal rewards experience that helps me live my best life possible.
Wow.
Okay. Those, we have to be thinking in the second category of enabling you through the work that you do to live the life that you want. That could be a financially successful life. It could be a life of calm, cool, and easy. And we don't, we oftentimes we stop at that employer line and say, you're an employee. I'm only going to do things to you under that umbrella of employee. The reality is there's an entire human being sitting there that's got big goals and big dreams, and they're going to count on this work experience to get there. So why can't we fuel that a bit differently? And so the incentives, instead of maybe giving money to your 401k, I'm giving money to pay off your student loan, or I'm giving you money to go on a Grand Canyon river rafting tour because that's your life dream. If we can get to that thinking and think and realize we are cultivating someone's life and the experience that they want within the confines of work, wow, what a different category this opens up, and what a different level of engagement you're going to get. And if I want a boss, if I have a boss, I want her focused on helping me cultivate the life I want, because that gets my loyalty, it gets my dedication. I will never let you down. If you say that you're going to help me be a, the best employee possible, okay, that's fine. It doesn't, it's not derogatory, but it's certainly not inspiring me like the other one would.
So that is so amazing to me. And that was one of the questions that I had for you. It's like, how do we do this? So it's a little easier for me being in a small company to talk to my, you know, 30 plus employees and say, hey, you know, let's talk about what's most important to you as a person. And by the way, I absolutely love this idea, because I do believe, I sincerely believe that it will cause people to actually be more productive, to be better employees, to get better work product out there, which is what the company wants ultimately. But I believe that that drives the motivation and the loyalty. But how do I, and some of these companies you consult with, that you work with, they've got thousands of employees. How do you individualize the experience? Because you talked about it's time for leaders to see people, to see not workers, but to see people and individuals. So it's not, here are my workers, my employees. It's, here are the people and the humans that work for me that have individual needs and see them as individual. How do you scale that?
My my first step in that, no matter if you've got 500,000 employees or, 50, is to really think about maybe some of the pinnacle life moments that humans typically go through. Mm-hmm. All right, so there's a graduation probably of their daughter or son from college. There could be a wedding. There could be a birth. There could be a divorce. There could be getting a dog, right? These are, there's some big categories, but they really do encapsulate that human experience. And is there a way that you can support some of those? Why don't you give $500 for a dog donation to adopt, for the adoption fee, and save some animals and give that, you know, your employee a pet? Can you give them an extra few days off for their wedding? Because it's a big deal and we want to celebrate. You know, there are so many ways, even at a large category level, even a massive company could do a few things extra just to say, hey, I know you're a real person. I know you've got things to do outside of here. And that's really great. And I want to support that. Sometimes that's a flexibility in during the day so I can go to the kids' baseball game. But sometimes that's taking a few extra moments to let you be you. And I'll take this opportunity, if I can, to go off on something that I'm always disappointed in, and it's bereavement leaves. I really don't like that a policy would dictate who I am close to or whom I am grieving over somebody who died. Why do we have to be so strict on these things? Can I just say, you know what, Michelle, this person was clearly important to you. Take a couple days and go ahead and go to the funeral and grieve. We'll figure out something else to take care of the work. But we've got so many folks on this, on the policies of, well, if they're not directly related, it doesn't count. But it does count. And that to me is a good difference between looking at you as an employee and looking at you as a person. And I would argue there's so much goodwill when you do something like that, that it's going to be way better than anybody who's abusing it anyway. There could be abuse, sure, in my line of thinking. I realize that. But that's why, you know, you get very clear about what success looks like, and then you hold people accountable to it. I want more out of the workforce. I want more out of work. I don't want you to work less, per se. I just want you to work in a way that really is meaningful for you. And sometimes that's not always 9 to 5, Monday through Friday.
You know, we spend, that well said, we spend more time at work, arguably, than anywhere else, right? I mean, than with your family, because you do have to sleep, right? I mean, at least a few hours, and then I travel. So I think that for us to rethink the work experience is very important. And I think that's a very well taken point. Now, one of the things that I thought was eye-opening is you talked about the culture of an organization, and how you explained it, though, oh so clearly was it's in the policies, the procedures, the way that you conduct your work. And, you know, I always thought about culture as your mission and your vision. I never thought about it as your policies. You just brought up the bereavement one as an example. So how, and I will tell you that we tend to be pretty flexible around those types of things. But how do you be clear with policy? Like how do, you know, companies where they're comfortable, particularly large organizations, still allowing some flexibility, how do you pull together policies, procedures, your governance with the culture that you really want and being able to support like the future of work?
So the future of work will undoubtedly contain two things that are different than today. Mm-hmm. It's going to contain a lot more speed. Yep. We're never going to be this slow again, ever. And in the history of the future of work will never be as slow as it is right this moment, right? It's only going to get, you know, accelerated. And I think the other piece is we're never going to be done with the exchange evolving, right? Because something else will come along and it will happen. It may not be as big as an industrial revolution, but there's always going to be this opportunity for changing and getting better and getting stronger. And so that, to me, it gives me hope that we'll create some better places to work for folks moving, you know, whomever that is. The other thing that maybe that your question raises for me is, can you look for things like leadership in unusual places? For example, we tend to look at leadership as a tenure. You've been there a while. You've been there 10, 15 years. Then you get promoted. Now you're a manager. Now you're a director. And I'm wondering if leadership couldn't be looked at as something that emerges on the spot when needed. It's maybe not by title. Maybe it's not by age. Maybe there's a 22-year-old and she's pretty awesome and she's leading away. And if we gave her the platform to lead, she would even lead more. But we don't because of the title of the position. And so just being open to the fact that leadership could emerge on a brand new person, maybe even on her first day, is a very different model than you've got to be here 15 years, then you'll get a promotion, and then you'll get a bigger, you know, bigger office, whatever that trajectory is. Yeah. We can change all that right now and still have you do your best work and be validated. But again, it goes back to that exchange that you're looking for, right? So, but why don't we look for things differently in terms of leadership is a good example. Tenure doesn't necessarily mean productivity. It never has. We've made it that way for a variety of reasons in work's history. But tenure and productivity are not really all that related, quite honestly.
Wow, that's really interesting. Now, you're making me think about, you stated that about 21% of the workforce is actually engaged in work. Define for everyone what engagement means to you, and then let's talk about how we drive engagement, because I think once people really understand what does that really mean in practical terms, you want it for your employees, right? You really want it as an employer.
Yeah. You know, there's it's even not so finite of a line, but there's a difference between me showing up to a job and me showing up to an experience. Mm-hmm. I want you to show up for an experience because the value that I'm going to need to get out of you as an individual is in the experience. It's not in the job, right? And I'm not a big fan of policies per se. I'm a huge fan of practices. And you know, a good example is we had an individual, this was when I just started out, she was having a hard day, a really hard day, and in an all-staff meeting of like 300 people, she stood up and she dropped an F-bomb toward the manager and said, you know, F off you. And it was, everyone was like, oh, she's getting fired, she's getting fired, she's getting fired. And so I was the HR person, and I'm like, okay, let's take a break. You know, I went out, took care of that, and ended up not firing her or recommending she got fired. And everybody was like, that's not fair. I said, well, you know what? If your dog had just died, you were just kicked out of your apartment, and you lost, you know, some other major thing in your life, you too can tell the manager to F off, right? Because it's a general reasonable practice to do it. Now, on the surface of it, you should never do that. We know that. But again, we wouldn't fire you if you showed up to work and had all these problems right now and you just lashed out. We wouldn't fire you either. So it does come back to the sense of fairness. But I like practices because it gives us the human equation into it. It gives us a little bit of room to figure out what's the best decision in this particular case, bereavement or not. So I'm not a big fan of policies as much as practices. Yeah. Here's generally how we react to that. Here's generally how we respond. And then you can kind of tailor things to be, you know, a little bit more aligned perhaps. So the engagement piece to me is really centered around that. Is there enough room in this work exchange for me to show up and do the things I love and do them with people that I like or at least enjoy somewhat? And I feel good about my work, because when you can say, yes, I love what I'm doing, I'm getting paid for it in a way that's decent enough or fair, and I like where I'm doing it, you really have got a magical formula there. So I would just keep encouraging people to think about engagement in this context of productivity. I think we could eke a lot more value out of our work exchanges, quite honestly. I think I see bad managers doing silly things that just irritate people, and then they're spending time talking about that. They're complaining to their coworkers about their boss, right? That's a lot of wasted time. And are we able just to say, you know what, I don't have to act like that anymore. I don't have to be that controlling. I can say, you know what, here's what I want. Can you make that happen? You can, great. Show me when it's done. And then that's it. You step away. So there's more room and that flexibility to get engagement. But engagement for me is, I want you to show up. I want you to do your best work. I want you to give it everything you can. And if you can cross that magical line to be, you know, loyal and be out there advocating for the product and the company that we're doing, that's a huge win, right? And that's what you want. That's the real value of an employee. In many ways, it has nothing to do with you just being an employee. Yeah. There's no real value there. So get the other value out that you can do. And to me, that's why I wrote the book. I want the exchange to be better.
Right.
Than it is today.
I love that you talk about the value of the employee. I love that you say that it's more than just, I'm like, what does that mean? It's more than just the productivity of the person. And then it's like, oh yeah, they're going to go the extra mile. They're going to really care. When they're talking to a client, the passion is going to come across, right? And they're going to be there for you when you most need them. And I believe that me as a leader, it follows the same, but that's part of the exchange, right? You know, I like to believe that I treat people exactly the way that I want to be treated as well, like a whole person. Yeah. So let's talk about this topic of working remote or not.
Okay.
Right? Everybody talks about it. Everybody's seemingly tired of it, but not really, because it's one of the pieces of the new work exchange, not the whole thing. Now, I know that World at Work very effectively works remotely, but there are opportunities for collaboration. We'll talk about that in a moment. I know that some companies, again, they have to be here 5 days. Some are hybrid. I can talk about what we do and why. But I'd like to get your perspective around, you know, when you hear people that say, well, here I am at an event and I'm podcasting people. As I was getting ready for you, I was asking people out on the floor at your conference how they felt about, you know, and what they most value about work. I had a woman say to me, she was probably mid-level career, we work 100% remote now, and I hate it. I'm like, oh my gosh. And then she proceeded to talk about the company name and all that. And I asked my director of marketing, cut all that part. You know, let's keep her anonymous. But she does. And then we delved into why. And it was really around lack of having an opportunity to collaborate, to learn from others, learn on the job, to just turn around and say, hey, I'm having a problem. She said everything needed to be scheduled now through, you know, an online meeting. And do you have time instead of, you know, the ad hoc water cooler, you know, things that happen at the water cooler, I should say. So I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, work in, out, hybrid, what pros, cons, what you've seen work and not, and why.
Sure. I follow pretty closely which organization is doing what. Like, we track very closely who went back to the office first and which industry, right? So you may be surprised to learn that the industry with the most remote workers is healthcare, which is interesting, because when you think about healthcare, you typically, maybe the doctor, she's got to be on site. And that's case, and that's true for most doctors, right? Nurses and hospitals. But healthcare has got a lot of administrative parts that can be done from anywhere, right? So we see a lot of remoteness there. I think the question is, we need to change the question in particular, because we are never going back to 100% office, and we're never, and there's only, I think, 16% of companies worldwide that are 100% remote. We'll see if that goes up or down. It's definitely not the majority. And I guess it comes down to, I think, Michelle, people are looking for not even necessarily in the office or not, they're looking for a sense of freedom and flexibility, mm-hmm. right? We talk about compensation a lot at World at Work, and it, for me, I've never had people say it's really about the money. It's more about the things I can do with the money, the mm-hmm. freedom I have, or I can send my kid to college without worry that they'd have to pay for it, right? There's a sense of freedom that comes with making a lot of money, and that's what people are after. So similar to work, right? There's flexibility, and I don't care, even if you're in a manufacturing role or even you're in a hospital, you can provide flexibility in terms of what scheduling you can do. Maybe you can do your trainings from home and virtual versus coming into the hospital. Because I think a lot of what people didn't like about work mm-hmm. before was the ancillary things like the commute, like the hassle. Like I have to sit in a car for 2 hours to then sit somewhere for 8 hours, then sit in a car for 2 more hours. That's not a good setup, right? So perhaps we can take away some of those more detracting parts about work, commutes, for example, never having a good place to go to lunch or whatever the thing is that's getting in your way. And we can work on some of those because the incentives to come back to the office were pretty plentiful when it first happened. There were dog cards being given, you can go wash your dog. There was commuter, benefits. You got $25 every day for gas. There's not so many perks anymore. It's get back to the office or else. And I guess I would ask folks to come back to this notion of where do you do your best work? And is that applicable for every day of the week? Maybe for me on Mondays, I would actually love to hide on Mondays, quite honestly. I would like to be in my own little room and no one talking to me because I just get a lot over the weekend because we're global operations. So Mondays are always a tough Monday morning because I've got a ton of things that have come in. And if I didn't get to it on Sunday, I know it's sitting there. So for me, I would love just to hide. That's my where I'll do my best work. Now, oftentimes I can't do that because we always have a leadership team meeting on Monday. But can I share one more example of something that happened?
Yes.
It's things like dress code. Right? Mm-hmm. Think about dress code for a moment and the construct of a human experience and whatnot. And we have to be careful here because when I got to World at Work, they had a jeans. You could wear jeans on Friday if you donated to the local foundation and whatnot. You could give $5, you can wear jeans. And one of my very first questions that got asked from the staff as the new CEO for World at Work was, can we still wear jeans on Fridays? And, I come from a very different culture. I was at W.L. Gore, which it's a pretty flat organization. There are no supervisors. There's no job descriptions, right? There's no job titles. So it's a pretty big company. So I basically said, I don't really care what you wear to work. What honestly is, I want you to do and wear whatever you need to wear to do amazing work all day long for our members. That's what I'm
love it.
So that was on a Friday. And then on Monday, I'm sitting at my desk and I see someone walk by and basically what I would say is pajamas. And I was like, what have I done? Oh no, I've gone too far, right? I was like, okay, can I pull this back somehow and not be a jerk? Because I'm like, okay, I did no idea you would come in your pajamas. But they did. And so I'm like, I had to sit to myself and say, all right, do I do something or I just keep going? And I decided, you know what? I'm just going to keep going. But you have to be ready when you open this flexibility door and this freedom door that someone's going to walk through it in a way that you don't like. And it was really a moment where I had to stop and think, all right, did I go too far? Should I have been more restrictive? I didn't. I let it hold. But those are things that are going to happen. So if you can think about that as you do make these moves, it may be easier to deal with it because someone's going to push it and then come to work in pajamas and you're like, okay, I didn't think that was going to happen, but it did.
That's great. So your one word of wisdom is when you talk about dress code, just make sure you have the disclaimer on, leave the pajamas at home.
Yes, I should add that, right?
I get it. So just think about the implication of your policy. That's very interesting.
Yeah. And the ways it could play out, right? Maybe do some modeling about, hey, here's how the things are going to play out and what's the worst case and best case. It may have prepared me. I'm sure that was quite of a shocked look on my face when this happened. I'm like, wow, okay. Right.
I don't know. I hate to say it, but I think one of my daughters would have done exactly that. So I'm glad that you would have let her keep her job.
Gotta keep going, right? That's how it works.
So how do you make it work? Now, I think some of your people are remote, yes? And then you've got some time in the... How do you guys work today at World at Work?
We're 100% remote.
You are 100% remote.
But we do have our Scottsdale is where our headquarters is. In Scottsdale, Arizona. And we do have somebody in the office typically during the hours because they're receiving packages or we're shipping things out. Yeah. And so we rotate people in and out. So no one has to work 100%. They could always work someplace if they wanted to, but otherwise it's 100% remote. or it's a little bit of a hybrid for a few individuals who have to be at the front desk.
Yep. Okay.
Rotate it.
So how do you, have you seen a change, or how do you develop people and make sure that they're collaborating and learning, and do you create space for that, or how does that happen? Because I know that we're hearing from an employee perspective, some in pockets, that they're not getting that extra development or opportunity to collaborate that they are looking for.
Yeah, I think that continues to be an issue, and it's an issue that I'm worried about primarily because we are so far behind on skill development as a planet. Right? We don't have the skills that we know we need. We're already behind. So the work from home could have actually added more of a gap than we would have liked, because we're still seeing a big drag in terms of more of a lag, if you will, of the skill development. So one thing to think about, too, is being way more intentional about infusing some other aspects that would normally happen, like at a water cooler you mentioned earlier. What is the version of that online? Because I think you would agree, if you and I were on a Zoom screen or, you know, Team screen, and we did a high five virtually, it wouldn't quite feel the same as if we did it right now and we smacked hands and we had the feeling and we connected. We should not argue that there's a difference there, because there is a difference there. So maybe we can use that as a way to think about then, what does this development in this case, what does it look like? You're going to have to be more intentional about it. You're going to have to be more structured about it than you probably have been before. And this is a case where I would lean into some structure versus saying everything's free, it's a free-for-all chaotic. No, I would be very intentional about coaching conversations, about development plans, putting those in, and also maybe weaving in some of the social aspects that are just now been robbed, right, of this workplace experience because of remoteness. Happy hours, virtual happy hours, virtual celebrations. Are there ways to bring people together more actively and do something that's meaningful? Because the downside of if we just let people return to work and we don't provide a reason for them to return to work, you're automatically disengaging a large part of your workforce. What's the incentive to come in? Is it extra something? Is it extra attention? Is it extra money? Is it extra anything? Or am I just, you know, adding the hour commute to do exactly what I could do at home? You need a better answer than just because I said so, right? And sometimes there's a better answer, sometimes there's not. But I would just be honest with each other and say, do we have a real reason that we need you here at this moment in time? If there is, bring them in. There's nothing wrong with that. But if there's not, maybe be open to trying 4 hours a day or a day a week out of the office, something, just to see what works. And if you're clear on the expectations and the outcomes that you need to achieve, and you are absolutely holding people accountable to them, it should technically just all work out at the end of the week or the month when things get wrapped up.
So to me, that's very smart leadership. When I think about, we're in Atlanta, for example, right? Very high traffic. It's what you're talking about. Hour and a half commutes, it's tough. And I've always told people, this even precedes pandemic, look, if you're going to come in here and just put your earbuds in because you're spending 8 hours on spreadsheets, I don't want to see you. The reason for you to come in is to collaborate and be with your teammates.
Yes, yes.
So figure out, you and your team that you're working with, what days you want that to happen, when do you want that to happen, how do you want that experience to happen. But don't come in just for that, right? So we happen to be hybrid. And I do find, I'll be really transparent, sometimes it's very hard. We have a couple days that everyone's in, and those are the days that they schedule time with yours truly. So I feel like sometimes I'm like, yes, I can't wait for everybody to be home, right? So I can get some work done, which sounds really a little counterintuitive, but I'm sure you understand in your position what I mean, right? Because mm-hmm. people want to spend that time with you. So I believe that leaders need to think about, just like what you said, what the intent is of being in the office. And I don't think, Scott, that just, I'm going to say, saying to people, hey, yeah, you can bring your dog. Okay, you can wear jeans. All right, we're going to have snacks and we're going to bring in lunch. But is that really the driver ultimately? Maybe it is to some degree for people. But you mentioned that most people, if we go with the assumption that they don't want to be mediocre, I loved that you said that, because we hear about a lot of mediocrity today. So is it just bringing my dog? Like, I think that those things are fantastic, and I love them, and I bring my dog in, you know, from on occasion, and people tend to like her.
Right.
But anyway, I think it's more about providing those learning experiences as well. But what is it that people want, right? So making that time, I think, you know, to document and understand what individual drivers are, what did they really want out of the work experience? You talked about working at W.L. Gore, and I'd like to discuss that a little bit, okay, if we could. So two things that stood out for me about that work and your experience there. The first one was around the flat organization, and I happen to be an advocate of that. I tell people, listen, when they're interviewing, you also talked about the importance of the interview. I say, are you okay, because you're a senior person, let's say, someone with a lot of experience, that an analyst has the same voice as you on a project if he or she, you know, they've got a really good idea. Like, we're flat. So everybody's voice counts and their opinions count. Are you good with that? You know, particularly, yeah, if they've run big teams. So I'd like to talk about how they made that work there. And then I also wanted to talk about that one-page development form, that one-page employee. I call it almost like a contract, but really understanding what matters to the employee and the employer, that relationship. So,
I like that you asked that question during interviews, because here's one, maybe a valuable nugget I hope people can use. In any organization, do you want a person to go to the person with the right answer or to go to the person with the title? And oftentimes they are completely opposite people, completely different people. So if I have to go to the VP first before I talk to any of your directors or your direct reports, even though I know one of your direct reports who's just an analyst, so to speak, but I know she's got the answer. She's the one that I want to go to. Why can't I just go there and get the answer? And we're so bought into this, you know, territorial piece that surrounds our titles that it sometimes drives really bad and costly decisions, because I want the best information in the shortest amount of time possible, and that may not always be by someone's title, right? Big titles can mean a lot of great things. I'm sure that you're amazing. But if I need something else, I mean, and that to me is the spirit of the flat organization. You go where you need to go to get what you need done, and it doesn't matter if you're outside the line or not. And it's a little bit having everybody count, right? Everyone gets a voice, everyone gets to speak up, and backing that up when times get a little bit more restrictive or whatnot. So I think to me that's what flat meant at Gore. You weren't driven by titles, and you had to really work around to figure out who can do what and who can help you. But that does a lot of way to build relationships too, which worked pretty well. So that was a little bit about being flat. And I try to do that at World at Work. I tell people all the time that as a CEO, I am not more important than you. I just have a different level of decision making. But your voice counts. You get to speak up. You should never be holding back if you've got a thought, even if it's a different thought than I have, and because you're really reacting to the title. Mm-hmm. You may get this. Everybody remembers that I am the CEO way more than I do. All the time, no matter what they watch what I do, they watch what I say, and I'm like, okay, I really didn't mean it that way, whatever the thing is. But it's really important that, I factor that in, because sometimes people interpret what I'm saying differently because of the role I'm in. But I agree, I'm not more important than other people in World at Work. I just carry a level of decision-making that's probably different than most other people, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, that keeps me a little bit level too, and not getting too crazy, because, it's like the pajamas. I was like, oh my gosh, I have the ability to say, stop wearing pajamas. But I also have the ability to maybe let success play out and see if we can still get there, Maybe that bothered me more than I know. I don't know.
I think it's, okay. I'm just going to tell you that you're one of the most well-dressed men that I've ever seen. Are always very well put together. In fact, we had a conversation about your suits. Complete reflection of your personality and who you are. For me, I don't think I'd like it if people were wearing PJs either, but but I get it. So I understand why that would bother you.
I had a part of it too is, we bring to work today work experiences from, our life, right? And I had a CEO one time who I would classify as a little bit out there, and he was he hated white socks, and he forbid anybody in the company to ever wear white socks.
Oh my gosh.
And he would check. And then at one point he was traveling, so we sent around an iPad and a screen, and he could move it around the work floors and see at people's socks. And I'm like, okay, this has gone too far. And you have to think about, maybe I'm reacting to some of that, post-traumatic stress around the white sock incident, but I'm like, I don't care what you wear. Wear white socks even. Let's get crazy. So I do.
It all shapes wonderful.
Our current, thinking about work, which is important to look back to and say, why do we believe these things? Whether that's, how you view productivity or even remote work, right? It's your position on remote work is shaped by a lot of other things than just what's happening right now at work.
And this is, to me, one of the biggest takeaways of our conversation today, because you talk a lot about history and you talk a lot about what has shaped our frame, the way that we think, our own frameworks, and how we think about work and our experiences, and challenge them. Because, yesterday was yesterday. We should learn from that. We have now, and we have an opportunity to shape our future. And so it's almost like being introspective and saying, okay, that was here, and now I got it why I feel this way. Does that make sense for the future? I think that's what you're really challenging people to think about. What is it that makes sense for the future?
Yeah, and what makes the best sense, right, or the most sense? Because we don't have the need for people to be productive and engaged isn't going down. It's only going up, right? We've got a lot of constraints and challenges ahead of us as, businesses. So we know we're going to be more and more reliant on people. I just want that people experience to be as robust as possible, because that's where the value creation comes for your customers, or in our case, our members.
Right.
Right? You got to be all about creating a lot more value. And the extent to which your employees create value is contingent on the exchange that you've given them. It's plain and simple. And that's, to me, is why I love this work, because I think we can be a bit different in our thinking and acting around these exchanges, whatever, because there's millions of exchanges every day in every workplace. Why don't we tip it in a different direction and see what happens? Let's try it.
I got to tell you, Scott, that was extremely well said. Now, I want to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
Which would be around, so employees. Let's assume that I am the best company to work for. I understand this new work exchange. I've got the value prop. I have hired you. I'm bringing you in. What is the role and the job of the employee in all of this? Right? Because we talked about it being an exchange, and we talked about, the employer will do this. The employee does that. Now, what is it that people that really want to be part of this new world of work, and they want to be the one that's selected when they're hiring, just, they've had 100 applicants and only two are going to make it. What is it that makes that difference and you would encourage employees to think about?
I would be very selective with where you choose to work. Mm. And I would really base it on where it is that you think, whatever criterion you have, what workplace and what work experience is really going to catapult you forward, right? And again, you may say, I don't want to work a lot. I only want to work 30 hours a week, and I want it to feel like this. Great. That's really valuable information to have. Yeah. When I went to work in fast food the very first time, it was clearly for amount of time. I did a very specific thing. I didn't necessarily correlate some of the goals that I had. I just wanted to see how the world worked. I've always been a big economics person. I loved how business works. I'm fascinated by these exchanges in business. So being clear about what you want to get out of it, and then being selective and not just defaulting into maybe a job, because we all have to have jobs at some point in terms of it being a job. But that doesn't mean your next role can't be more an adventure or a career or whatever kind of language it works for you. So for the employee, I would say you are, if you have to, break your own damn glass ceiling. Okay. If you have to do something differently, you step up and say, here's what I think should happen. Here's what I want to see happen. And I would not, I wouldn't back down on that. What are they going to do? Fire you? So what? Who's not been fired from a job? I could tell several stories of my past history. And we don't want to be reckless or callous, but we also want to be clear that you matter and you count. And part of that mattering and counting on your way to doing great work is you being your full self and getting that experience validated by the exchange. It's as simple as that. And if you're not clear, it'll become clearer over time as you do more work. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. You'll get more clarity on it. But I would be a bit selfish if I were to encourage employees to think about it and take the experiences that you need and work behind the scenes, and if you can, to cultivate that experience so it gives you what you want. There's nothing wrong with that, right? And again, if you have to, break your own ceiling. Nothing wrong with that thinking, right?
I just love that. And I think that people need to be challenging themselves. I do see that people will tend to sit back a little bit and wait for those opportunities, or sit back and see how things will play out. But being very active and being very clear about what you want also up front, and what the company wants, and understanding if you can align to that, right? That will probably make a big difference.
And Michelle, that's important, because you've uncovered a mental state that I want to just highlight.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be speaking up if I'm in a production line somewhere and smart people have already put together the entire production process. We know what success looks like. We know how to do it. We've already thought about it. You don't have to bring your brain per se. You just got to do these things. That's not what's happening today, though, right? In life, right? In real life. So it is important that you speak up, and it is important that you have your voice, and then you try to cultivate that experience, because there's a lot more options now besides me being right here from 9 to 5 in this spot during this specific work, right? That's a production mentality.
Yeah.
So I shouldn't comment because I don't know what I'm talking about. Well, maybe you should, because you're responsible for your own experience now and, you know, and getting to whatever that is. And achieving that. So I would say, you know, be a bit more selfish to folks and get that clarity about what you want out of it. And then holding the employer accountable for that exchange, right? Why not? Why not make it better for both? I mean, we can all make some more money and have some more fun, which is really cool things to do.
So any last words of wisdom for our listeners today?
I think, anybody listening, if they can help us on this journey to maybe have people rethink this construct of work, it's something that can be a really amazing enabler of a great life. So if we look at it from that perspective, I mean, no one's going to have a perfect work day every single day, but wow, the potential of what you're capable of will be manifested through work. So I would go in swinging and having a good time and figuring this stuff out with a lot of energy and robustness, because it's in that where I think the true magic of work could happen. And not everybody will get there, and that's unfortunate, but I hope as many people will get there as possible and let you have the life that you want, enabled by work. I mean, what the heck's wrong with that?
Oh, I think that's so inspirational. Like we talked about, we spent a lot of time there, Scott. So Scott Caywood, CEO of World at Work, the self-professed work nerd, as you call it, who loves it all. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us today. I sincerely appreciate it. And we welcome you back anytime to ride in the big wheel.
I love it. All right, we'll see you next time then. Thanks for your time.
Hey, it's Michelle. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy our podcast and know someone who you believe would make a great guest, I would love to hear from you. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's talk. I'd love to hear your feedback. And as always, may it inspire you in your own personal and professional journey of life. Run.